Hey, so this is the first week of a series on marriage. We're talking about marriage, and the series title is The One I Love, and each week we're going to start off from hearing from a real-life married couple that are a part of our church family. And so today's married couple that we're going to be hearing from today is David and Laura Wagner, so I want to introduce them to you. Some of you have kind of heard little bits of their story. Some of you might know them, but we want to hear from them about their marriage. We're going to hear kind of a marriage story each week, how they met, things like that, and then kind of launch into the sermon from there. But first of all, welcome David and Laura Wagner. All right, so this could be like a really long conversation, but we'll try to keep it somewhat short. Tell us your story. How did you guys meet? How long have you been married? Things like that.
We met in 2003 at the Renaissance Festival in California. We were both there with other people, so we didn't really have a chance to get to know each other, but we exchanged numbers and promised to call, and later that night we did, and 21 hours later we hung up the phone, knowing...
Are you serious?
Yes.
21
hours later. Yes.
My face was burning.
Wow.
I had to keep plugging in the phones. And
I'm impressed. Okay.
We've realized during that conversation that we live 380 miles apart. So although we immediately felt like, you know, there was a connection and it was going to be a lot of traveling in the next 6 months. So we both had known Jesus at that point. We were both Christians. I had gotten saved when I was 12, 1978, and was close to God and was very involved in the church. I know that surprises some of you that I was involved, but I was very involved, but I had fallen away and spent 8 years of my life really surrounded by New Agey, hocus-pocus people, and but was always surprised how often they didn't see God. It's like, how do you not see God in that? I mean, with your naturalistic healing and all of the other things you're doing, how are you missing it? So even though I wasn't actively following God, he was still part of my life, and I felt his finger on my life. Laura, on the other hand, had grown up in what she thought was a Christian family, but after she actually started to follow the Lord, realized that it probably wasn't quite as biblically based as she thought. She had a difficult relationship with her father. Her mom was actually very critical of her relationship deepening with Jesus. So when we met, I was in a place where, although I thought my life was interesting, I knew that there was something missing. And I knew partially what that was. I knew that I needed to get my relationship with God right, but was looking for something better with a person. But as a Christian, going to the bar scene and trying to meet somebody doesn't work. And going to church and inviting somebody to the bar doesn't work. So to go almost 400 miles away from home and then seeing the woman that I was going to marry across the way and just sort of sneaking away from my friends going, can I get your number? And then...
You're recommending Renaissance festivals? Is that what I'm hearing? If you're single and want to meet someone... Californian Renaissance,
yeah,
specifically the
California
ones. Yeah.
So anyway, we met in 2003, and we met in July. I asked Laura to marry me at in December at her family's Christmas gathering. And she said yes.
Nice.
Yes, to my surprise. So then, as life went on, she was going to you were being laid off. So she got transferred to a new company down in San Diego, which is where I lived. And so we started working towards the whole marriage thing and called her one day and said, well, okay, so we can get our marriage license on Friday. And that was the day before Valentine's Day, Friday the 13th.
How romantic, yeah.
We met the pastor that married us at a church gathering, a church dance, a Valentine's dance. And after promising him that we would go to marriage counseling, he agreed to marry us. And then we started looking at the dates and realized that we were going to get married on April 1st. April Fool's Day. Yeah.
I've done a wedding on April 1st before. That one of those. April Fool's weddings.
We walked from the apartment I was living into the beach and a very small gathering, got married with my parents, her brother, and a good friend of mine, and have been married ever since.
Awesome. So that's, let's see, do the math. It's 14 years? roughly 12
years. We knew each other for 10 months before getting married.
Okay, awesome. And
a pretty worldly lifestyle. But before we decided to get married, we kind of talked about, I had been married before. I had a previous marriage. I got married right out of high school at the age of 18 to a Coast Guardsman, and we were married for 7 years and then just grew up and grew apart. And but that was instrumental to who I am today. Learned a lot from that. But we had some things to work through as far as biblically, was it right for me to remarry, things like that. So we did go to marital counseling, and I would recommend that highly to anyone, even after you get married, because the timing didn't work out right, so we kind of did the marital counseling after we got married. But at the same time, we kind of went into it with our eyes wide open, and you actually do learn a lot about each other through marital counseling, because we had an older couple that was our mentor, and they really ask you to dive deep and talk about the things that most people don't want to talk about. They just want to glaze over and not address, you know. So that was huge for us, and really kind of got us on the right platform to make a real go at it, I mean, as far as a biblical marriage was concerned. So we had that conversation before we got married that, yes, I had been divorced, and divorce, is we're not going into this, is that an option? It is not an option. This is do or die. Literally.
Or kill.
So, and we've had those times where literally, you know.
That I was going to ask that next. I mean, as far as, you know, you went from 21 hours on the phone to, I'm sure it's just like that today, right? You're totally as, I mean, have there been ups and downs, or has it been just smooth sailing? And specifically, I'm asking this, I want to know kind of how God has worked. I know, in particular, you guys went through about 5 years ago. Almost exactly, right? Or exactly.
Yeah, their birthday's today.
Today's their birthday. Okay.
So as far as snacks, we do actually have cake after.
That's right. There's cake after the service. There is something to share. They did bring something to share. We're having cake after the service. So most of the people have no idea what we're talking about. Can you talk about what happened 5 years ago and how that kind of shaped your marriage, how God used that?
Well, as far as ups and downs, when we first got married, there were times that we both smoked. And both decided, well, we need to quit smoking. We're trying to get our life together. Quitting smoking is something we need to do. So that was fun. Mm-hmm. And
we had to take turns quitting because we couldn't do it at the same time.
You were really sweet to each other through that whole time, I assume.
There was
not irritable at all.
There was times that the only thing holding us together was ornery tenaciousness. Okay. I was tenacious. She was ornery.
There's something to be said for that. Yeah, there you go.
So marriage can be hard. And we know that. And I think that I didn't really realize how hard. God made her for me. And I know, as a Christian, I know that. She's my perfect mate. There are times that I see things in her that I don't care to deal with myself. It gets hard. But one of the things that God has done in our life that was really God doing it was 5 years ago today, our twin boys were born 4.5 months early. They were 1 pound, 10 ounces, 1 pound, 8 ounces. And we spent 4.5 months in the hospital, going back and forth from the hospital to visit them. And that is definitely the hardest thing we've gone through, but also the most amazing. From the moment they were born, we said, well, we wanted children to change our life. They have. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, if you've seen them or you will see them, I'm sure they'll be up here after cake. I don't think they got a little cold today. They're amazing. Mm-hmm. And they're perfect. They're perfect little children. Not that they're always behaved, but...
behaved is not what you're saying here. Yeah.
Considering they look like little gummy bears when they were born, they're little people now. Mm-hmm. It's just really, really cool. So things that God has done in our lives that happened simply because of God is, number one, we met. Number two, our children. Mm-hmm. And number three, our finances. that was probably our biggest real hurdle in our life, even probably bigger than dealing with the hospital and the boys. and we've just
right after that. Hmm. Yeah, basically the transition of childcare and when they come home and who's going to do what and the awkwardness of our roles today.
Did you want to say more about that? The awkwardness of our roles.
Our roles. Roles. No, I'm sorry.
We're working. We're going to start working on that too on May 1st.
That's our next thing.
Oh yes. My goodness.
So the boys were in the hospital for 4 months. I hadn't taken maternity leave, and I was still working, and we were going to the hospital at nighttime. And when we found out we were going to have two, we knew that childcare and things like that, the whole dynamic of what our plan was going to change. And now we have two kids, and if anybody has kids in childcare, you know how overwhelmingly expensive it is, and for what you get is not much, right? So anyway, that being said, we decided that that David would stop working, and
I made a lot less money.
Yeah. Well, and just his personality and his whole demeanor and everything just he's just a fantastic father. And so anyway, fortunately, when my office closed, I was able to come and work from home. So I'm a stay-at-home mom in a full-time work capacity, and David's there. So we're always together. but still, I mean, I'm that breadwinner role. I have that burden of responsibility and feeling like I have to just be perfect, and I have to just, you know, that I have to just exceed every expectation there is known to man, and that's hard on me. And then there's also that feeling for David with, you know, when really,
what are we having for lunch?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It goes beyond that, obviously. But I mean, if anybody's in that role reversal, you know, we've questioned whether or not we're doing the right thing. You know, is this really the way God has our relationship designed? And there's just some really, there's just an undercurrent that we have to battle against all the time. And it's not because I think we're doing the wrong thing. I think we're doing the right thing, and it's hard. But it's just, you know, those sacrifices that we're making and just really remembering to build each other up and let each other know how much we appreciate the mundane, the everyday, the stuff that we don't think about, helps us to get through. And in all of that, too, I mean, the boys have just blossomed. I mean, this, the way God has put us together in our home, my work environment, what he's doing, it's just, it's so hard. But it's so good, too. And I really don't know how much more I could express that, really, but you can take it from here.
Okay, so.
Yeah, so let me, now, in your 12 years, that's what we said, 12 years of marriage, when's the anniversary?
Three weeks ago.
So you just 12 years now, or just made it. 13 years.
No, we met in 2003, married in 2004.
Argument live right here, it'd be great. I'm just kidding. That's week two of the series, dealing with conflict. We can.
Well, you should have saved us for that.
So no, it's 12 years. We met 2003, married in 2004, 2016, 12 years.
It's 2017 though, so.
So it's 13 years.
lesson one. No, just kidding.
And actually, on things that hard lessons learned, I put apologize like you mean it.
Yeah, that's where I wanted to kind of close our time with the interview by asking them that. What are some hard, like hard-fought, hard-won lessons of marriage, wisdom that you can offer? And for all of us in this room, the best kind of lessons learned are lessons learned from other people's experience, I think, where you don't have to learn everything the hard way. If you're an I have to learn everything the hard way kind of person, that's a difficult road to walk down. And so it's good to learn other people's lessons, you know, lessons from other people and wisdom from other people. So I want to kind of wrap up our time with the interview with, what are some hard-fought lessons or lesson, you know, that you've learned?
Last week when you mentioned this, we're sitting here, and Laura leans over to me and says, don't do it. Don't get married.
Don't do it. Whoa.
Just don't do it. And, of course, she was kidding. So, and I've just got a quick little list of things that we talked about that we've learned, and that is the first thing is wait. Not wait to get married, but once you get married and all of your choices from there, wait. You want to buy a house? Wait. Pray about it. Think about it. You know, not put it off indefinitely, but wait for the Lord's timing. Wait on your spouse. If you want to do something, you need a new pair of shoes, don't just run to the store and buy them. Wait.
I think that
was probably the hardest lesson that we learned, because I was 38, she was 30, whatever, and
there's another lesson right there, you guys. This is great.
I had spent a lot of my life since I was a senior in high school. I moved out of my parents' house, still in high school, and I did whatever I wanted with my money, mm-hmm. with my time, and so just learning to wait. That was really important. Just slow down. Wait on everything but forgiveness. Okay? Hmm. Remember that forgiveness is not mentioning it until you have enough things to be angry about. But forgiveness is really letting it go. You know, the person says they're sorry, say it like you mean it, and move on. That's really important.
Accepting it.
Yes.
I was just going to say really self-sacrifice and just dying to yourself quietly and humbly every day, and it's so painful, and it's hard to do, but it is so 20 million times worth doing it. So in that moment where you're just like, I can't bring myself to do it, just say, God, do it for me, you know, work through me, and it's amazing what you can do when God is at that forefront, instead of feeling like you've got to muscle through yourself, or you have to forgive by yourself, or you have to confess something by yourself. I mean, you're never alone, and I think that that's what, you know, we went into our marriage with the triangle that, you know, here's God at the top, here's David, here's me, and as we grow together, we grow closer to God. So ultimately, that kind of gives you that pyramid image in your mind. As you grow closer as husband and wife with God there at the center, then you grow closer together.
So just to finish this up, that forgiveness, it's not easier to ask for permission than forgiveness. It's actually easier to ask for permission, okay? That's that waiting thing. Pray before the crisis, not waiting until the crisis happens, but pray together before the crisis. You'll be praying together regularly. For me, one of the hardest things to remember, working with the kids so much, is that Laura has to come first. It's Laura first. Well, it's God first, then Laura, then the children, then the church, then family and friends. Mm-hmm. I have a tendency, and it's really easy for me to do, that it's the boys, the boys, the boys, the boys. And Laura is really, really good at reminding me without nagging me, without, you know, making me feel like she's even reminding me, that it's by, she does it by putting me first. Mm. And that's just so important. Your spouse comes first, even when you have children. And that's hard, but your spouse has to come first. Laura and I will be together forever. Hopefully the boys will be moving out in 13 years. Mm-hmm. And then I've got just one last group of things. It says, say I'm sorry like I mean it. What? Yeah, say I'm sorry like I mean it, hug more often, and kiss longer. Those are the three things that I would tell people to do. Say you're sorry like you mean it, hug more, and kiss longer. Just take the time to be together.
Nice, nice wisdom, and a good way to end our interview. So thank you so much. David and Laura, would you please thank them for their time? Thank you. Well, we are talking about how to have a biblical marriage, and the idea of biblical marriage in general. This morning will set the kind of framework for the next 2 weeks. We're going to be talking about marriage from the Bible's perspective. So let me set this up, because I am going to draw. In fact, I'm going to draw a triangle in a little bit, a pyramid, that the same one that Laura was talking about, because I think it's helpful for us to think about. Let me get this over here. So this morning, what I'd like to do, what I'd like to talk about is to, let's be honest about the ways that are the preconceptions that we have when it comes to marriage. When we think about marriage and relationships, each one of us, none of us is a blank slate. Each one of us comes to the table with different things that we believe, different ways that our lives have been shaped by marriage, different perspectives on marriage, and it's shaped by a number of different things. It's shaped by our own experiences, and here's what I mean by that. So some of you have come from a family, when you think about the family that you grew up in, maybe you were blessed with a family that was super functional, that made marriage look easy. Or maybe parents, every time you saw your parents, it seemed like they were always getting along. If they ever fought, you never saw it. Maybe it was always behind closed doors, that kind of thing. And you got the perspective that marriage was easy. And for you, that actually isn't that helpful, because when you get into your own married relationship and you discover, hey, this is really hard. Am I doing this wrong? You know, that's not a very helpful lesson to learn, that marriage is easy, because it's not really that easy. And that's why, this is kind of a little side note, but I think it's healthy if you can have conflict in a healthy way, to do that in front of your children, those of you that are parents, let your kids witness healthy resolution, healthy conflict that resolves itself in a healthy way. That's helpful for them. That shows them how to do it when they get older and that sort of thing. So some of you have, the opposite experience, and I'd say most of you have the opposite experience, where you came from a tough family background, either an unhealthy marriage or a marriage that didn't survive, a marriage that split. And so for you, you have fear when you think about marriage. When you think about a marriage relationship or marriage in general, it is a kind of a fearful thing. It's something that you have trouble with. You're not sure about it. There's a lot of a fear around it. But our experiences shape us, and our culture shapes us. Society shapes us in a major way when it comes to marriage and love and relationships. And so we need to be honest about our preconceptions, be honest about what we think about when we think about marriage, and in order to evaluate and sort through what is true and what maybe is false. And so to do that, we're going to look at the Bible's perspective on marriage this morning. And I would say that this is desperately needed for the younger generation, those who are, maybe 30 and younger. A lot of people are getting married later than ever, and their skepticism about marriage is higher than ever. Their standards for what would make a good marriage partner are also through the roof, and it's almost impossible to live up to these impossibly high standards for what would make a great partner. And so marriage is this thing where a lot of us have the wrong idea about what marriage is and how a good marriage should work, what marriage is supposed to be all about. And you have kind of this bad foundation, this unhealthy perspective that a lot of people have when it comes to marriage. So we need the Bible's perspective. We need the Bible's image of what marriage is all about to speak some truth into all of these preconceptions, everything that we think about when it comes to marriage. And I want to say, too, that during the course of this series, so the 3 weeks that we're going to be talking about marriage, I'm going to be drawing on the Bible. It's going to be biblical. It's going to be what does the Bible say? But we also want it to be very practical and based on experience. Like I have a marriage that has made it 15 years now, 15 and a half years almost. Closing in on that, and I'll talk quite a bit probably about Pam and my marriage during the course of this series, but I'm also drawing on that experience, and I feel pretty good about our marriage. I feel, in many ways better than ever before in those 15 years, and I also want to make a little disclaimer here right at the very beginning, because when we talk about marriage and we talk about how important marriage is, and we're kind of painting this biblical picture for marriage, the Bible talks a lot about singlehood too, singleness, and it talks about the importance of that, and that there are some people that are called to a life of celibacy and singleness in order to devote themselves fully to the Lord. And the Bible praises that. The Bible raises that up as something that's really special and something that should be honored and something that really, in the culture that the Bible was written in, was unusual. The idea of remaining single was not a very common thing. It wasn't something that was looked fondly upon in the ancient world. But in our culture and in the church, it is something that those who are devoting their lives to the Lord and not dividing, kind of their attention between marriage and between serving the Lord, that's something that should be honored and something that, the Bible really does speak highly of. And so this whole purpose of the series is not to devalue anyone who's single, who thinks they maybe won't ever get married. That's a perfectly acceptable and blessed way to live that the Bible speaks very highly about. But we're trying to, during the course of this series, even though that's true, I want to be helpful to those of you who are in a married relationship, who are headed towards a married relationship, And we want to raise up the idea of marriage and offer support, and really that's the whole heart and the point behind this message. So to do that, we're going to look at Ephesians chapter 5, and we're going to talk about the biblical view of marriage. And this is really the passage in Scripture that teaches about how marriage is supposed to work more in depth than any other passage of Scripture. So Ephesians chapter 5, and we're going to start at verse 25. In just a moment there, you can turn there in your Bibles. It'll be on the screen behind me as well. But Ephesians chapter 5, starting at verse 25. Now, before we get there, I said we talked about the wrong perspective on marriage and how we need to be honest about where our perspectives have come from. And I remember so well when I had been married for about 2 years. I was a student in Bible college. Pam and I had moved up here to help start this church. So this is 2003, something like that. We got married in 2001, been married for probably less than 2 years, no kids at the time, and I was a full-time college student. Pam was teaching full-time, and we were helping get things going here at the church. And I remember sitting in a class called Marriage and Family, and the class was all about people that are going into ministry and helping them help those who are in marriages and who have families. And we read a number of books, and I had this just realization as I was sitting in class that I had the wrong idea about what marriage is supposed to be. We were reading a book called Sacred Marriage, and it hit me like a ton of bricks that I think my perspective on marriage has been shaped more by the culture than by God's Word. And really, that realization helped me. I mean, I don't know how our marriage would be if that didn't impact me at that time. But taking those lessons about what marriage is supposed to be, which is what the sermon's about, and applying those to my own life really transformed things. It really made a dramatic difference in the way I treated my wife, the way I thought about my marriage, and it changed things in a pretty powerful way. So to do that, let's look at the Bible's perspective on what marriage is. And we'll start at verse 25, Ephesians 5:25. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, so that he might present the church to himself in splendor, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy and without blemish. In the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church, because we are members of his body. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This mystery is profound, and I'm saying that it refers to Christ and the church. However, let each one of you love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. So two words that if you're taking notes, you can write these words down. The first word is love, and the second word is covenant. When you're thinking about marriage, love and covenant are very important words. Marriage is a loving, covenant-based relationship between a husband and a wife. Love and covenant. Now, the word love for us, our culture is really all over the map when it comes to the idea of what love means. And there are so many songs written about love. There's all these movies where love is kind of the main character in the movie. Love is the idea about love that reigns in our culture is this romantic idea of love instead of more of a decision-based act of love. And when you think about love in a marriage, I think you should think more about deciding love and less about feeling love. When we talk about love as an emotion, love as a feeling, that's a good thing. I think God created that idea. If you read the Song of Solomon, it's all over just this idea of this romantic love. I think it's a positive thing, but it's not something to build upon. Because love as a romantic idea is a fading thing. It's not something that just lasts in an eternal kind of way. And, you know, when I think about our culture's view of love, this is one of those things that really stands out to me, that our culture really thinks about love in this romantic idea and almost more of an infatuation, emotional-based thing. That love, according to our culture, is this idea that when you hold their hand, you feel electricity. right? There's just this, you are moved, you feel like the butterflies in your stomach. There's this just amazing connection you have with them. And I would say that's fine, that's good. You know, we heard about a 21-hour phone call. I mean, that's definitely what they were experiencing, David and Laura, and the, you know, when they first met. That's a good thing, but that's a fading thing. And it's not something that lasts forever. And it's something that I think if you're wise and if you want to have a healthy, strong marriage, you cultivate it, you work on that and kind of building that up. But I think marriage and the love in marriage is more like farming than it is magic. And here's what I mean by that. If that infatuation, just kind of head over heels feeling with somebody is like magic, right? You think about that and you're like, it's just magical. I felt like I floated home after I spent the day with them. You know, it was amazing. And it was such a great, great feeling. But then it was gone one day. We got married because we were so in love. We got married. And then I woke up one day and that feeling was gone, which is very common, which will happen. The infatuation, kind of this head over heels feeling, 12 to 18 months tops is what you got with that. And a lot of times people will, the sad version of this is when people, when that leaves, they go, it's gone. Like, we just lost whatever we had. And because it felt like magic, then why wouldn't you just magically have it with somebody else that you're not married to? And it's very common. Or you settle in for kind of a, like, man, this is pretty disappointing, but I made my promise, and so I'm just going to settle into kind of this low-level, you know, disappointing sort of marriage. And I think that's also an unhealthy way to view what love is and what love is supposed to be. When I say it's more like farming than magic, I think it's the kind of thing where you put work into it and you decide to love somebody. And those loving decisions lead to those loving feelings again. And there's something much more powerful about the kind of love that you feel with someone when you put a decade into living with them and loving them. And you go out for a date night and you feel those kind of butterfly feelings once again after you've cultivated and put that work in. That is a beautiful thing to experience with somebody. And it's more long-lasting. It's deeper. It's maybe not as, you know, electrical as the beginning kind of thing, but it's better. It's more powerful. It's stronger. It's something that you harvest after a time of cultivating. And there's a chance that your training, your background has kind of set you up to have this negative view of love, or this negative, this perspective on love that's not healthy, this kind of infatuation idea. I was at a Disney on Ice thing a few years ago, and I remember just this song of Cinderella and the Prince going around the ice skating rink, and there's this song that just over and over again, the refrain is, "This is love, this is love, this is love," kept getting repeated over and over again. And all these lessons about marriage and everything, I'd been thinking about all this stuff for quite a while and get to teach about marriage from time to time and marry people and as a part of my role as the pastor. And I was thinking in that moment, no, it's not. This is love, this is love. The prince and the princess going around the ice skating rink. This is love, this is love. And I was thinking, no, it's more than this. Like, this is great, but this is more like infatuation. This is more like that early beginning stuff than it is love. I read a humorous article in, I think it was, I don't know, New York Magazine or something like that. And it was about this woman who had been married for 10 years. And she was talking about how romantic it was when she was super sick, had dysentery, she said. I don't know if she was joking. I don't know if that was part of the... I thought that was just something you got on the Oregon Trail game that we played when we were kids, but she said she had dysentery and, like, just horrible stomach problems and was walking to the bathroom and was just so sick that she passed out, fell, and cracked a rib on, like, the sink, and then just was laying there, and because she didn't make it to the toilet, like, I'm not going to finish that. You know, just... She was a mess laying on the floor in her bathroom and just in pain and hurting, and her husband came in there and lovingly cared for her and, like, cleaned her up and, like, got her back into bed, and that's love. That doesn't seem romantic at all, but that's a different kind of love. And so she's talking in this essay about just how romantic that seems to her when she thinks about it now after 10 years of marriage and building a life with this person, and just how that's something that's better and deeper than this infatuation phase that is good. I think that's created by God. That's to drive us to this commitment that we make with one another. But it is not a foundation for marriage. Deciding love deciding love, the kind of love that is a decision, is a good foundation for marriage. Marriage is based on love. It's secured by this word covenant. This shows up in that verse we just read in Ephesians 5 when it says that the husband in verse 32 or verse 31, therefore shall a man leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. I wanted to write a little equation here on the board behind me, and it's this. When marriage happens, marriage is 1 + 1 = 1. The math doesn't make sense, but that's what marriage is. It's two separate, you know, people coming together and uniting together and becoming one. And it's held together by a covenant. It's held together by a promise. A covenant is something much deeper than a consumer relationship. There's a great book. This goes really in depth, but this is a fantastic book called The Meaning of Marriage by Tim Keller. And he talks about the difference between a consumer relationship and a covenant relationship. He says, throughout history, there have always been consumer relationships. Such a relationship lasts only as long as the vendor meets your needs at a cost acceptable to you. If another vendor delivers better services or the same services at a better cost, you have no obligation to stay in the relationship to the original vendor. In consumer relationships, it could be said that the individual's needs are more important than the relationships. But there's also always been covenant relationships. These are relationships that are binding on us. In a covenant, the good of the relationships takes precedence over the immediate needs of the individual. For example, a parent may get little emotionally out of caring for an infant, but there has always been an enormous social stigma attached to any parent who gives up raising their children because it's hard and unrewarding. Right? For most people, the very idea of that's unthinkable because society still considers the parent-child relationship to be a covenantal one, not a consumer one. So we understand that when it comes to parenting, but with marriage, our culture has taken a very casual view about the commitments we make in marriage. And marriage is a covenant relationship. It is 1 + 1 = 1, and sometimes the only thing holding you together is a promise you made. And to take the idea of breaking that covenant should be a decision that is not taken lightly. The Bible does give instances when Jesus is having a conversation with the Pharisees, and then later when Paul is teaching on marriage, there are very, very few instances where that covenant may be broken. And it's something that is not to be taken lightly. It's something that should be taken very seriously because a covenant is much deeper. It's much more binding. It's a uniting of two souls. It's something that the promise that is made is to be a lasting one, right? And the point is not to guilt anybody who's you know, divorced. That's not the point of this part of the conversation. But my hope is to, if you have taken a casual view on what that commitment is, I want you to take a more serious view about that. For those of you who are not married yet and who believe you're headed towards marriage at some point, take that seriously. It's a covenant. It is a promise. It is a commitment to make. And it's something that's more than a piece of paper. That's a very common thing, right? I don't need a piece of paper to tell me about my relationship with my, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend. It's just a piece of paper. No. It's vows before God, before the witnesses, before your family, before the preacher you're standing in front of, or the justice of the peace, or whatever. It is something more than just a piece of paper. It's this public declaration and commitment. Statistics tell us that, you know, a lot of people will walk away from their marriage when they go through a patch that's unhappy. But for those that remain married, there was an interesting statistic where 2/3 of people who said they were unhappily married, those that stayed married within 5 years, 2/3 of them moved from saying they were unhappy to now they're happy. And the only thing that might have kept them together in that moment was the commitment, the covenant that they made, that they're going to stay together. They made a commitment. They made this binding agreement. It's not a consumer relationship. Once I don't get what I want anymore, I'm out of here. It is a covenant. It's something that's longer lasting. In the book, the Odyssey, this, you know, old Greek poem by Homer, right? Is it Homer? Yeah, the Odyssey. There's a portion of the story where Ulysses is going by this region as a part of his adventure that he's going on, his quest. And he goes by this area where they know that the sirens are. Do you know, is familiar with all the sirens that are there? And they have this beautiful singing, and they try to lure the sailors into the rocks and destroy their vessel. And this song is just so magnetic that you just can't even resist it. And so Ulysses, in preparation for this, he takes all the men that are on his ship and he says, I want you to put beeswax in your ears so you cannot hear the singing of the sirens. But I am going to bind myself to the mast of the ship. He says, don't listen to me. What I'm making a commitment now that the sirens are going to try to lure me away, but I'm making this commitment. Do not listen to me. You guys have the beeswax in your ears. Just keep going the way you're going, and I'm going to stay bound to the mast. And this commitment keeps him safe because once he hears the song of the siren, he goes through this kind of temporary insanity, and he wants to go towards that song at risk of whatever. It doesn't matter at that point. He's willing to risk whatever. You know, it doesn't matter. And the sailors, because of this commitment he had made beforehand, they don't listen to him, and they keep going along their journey, and they continue their quest, and they make it out through safety. Listen, in many ways, that promise we make in our marriages is like that. Where we might go through these patches where things seem very difficult, things seem very hard to handle, we're unhappy for a period of time, feeling like this is not what we signed up for, but that commitment keeps us together until we can get to the smoother sailing and the happier seas, and there's something powerful about that. And the risk that our culture, you know, it the problem is that it devalues those promises and makes it so easy to walk away. And I think that should be something that we, as Christians in Christian marriage, we take that covenant seriously, and only in extreme situations would we walk away from that, not just simply because we're unhappy or whatever. Christian marriage is 1 + 1 = 1, but it's also, in many ways, 1 + 1 = 3. And here's what I mean by that. When the Apostle Paul is talking to the husbands that he's writing to, he says, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. He says the way Christ loves the church is he's growing them, he's sanctifying them, he's helping them grow spiritually. And I know of no other relationship in my life other than, you know, maybe the relationship with my parents from when I was a child that has helped me grow more than my marriage. Where 1 + 1, Pam and myself, equals something greater than just the sum of the sum of us together. That my wife has helped me grow spiritually so much. And it's a relationship that has helped shape me spiritually. And I think if we have that kind of ministry perspective on marriage, if we have two people that share a common faith and are committed to be loving and truthful to each other and to help each other grow, that can be a very, very powerful thing. And I think marriage is supposed to work like that. There's this growth aspect where together we help move each other towards Christ. And this is the triangle that Laura talked about that I think is a very helpful way of thinking about marriage. If God's here at the top, and then me or you, and then our spouse down here, as each of us move towards God, we also get closer to each other. The space there, as we move up the triangle, right, we get closer to God and closer to each other. And I think that's the place for strong marriages to go, is that as we move closer towards God, we also move closer to each other. And let me make a very important sales pitch here. If you are not married and you're looking for someone, you know, you're dating, you're, you know, think marriage is in your future, pick someone who shares your faith. It's so important. If the most important relationship in your life is your relationship with God, and the person that you're partnering with in your life in every way does not share that with you, you're not setting yourself up for a successful relationship. You're either going to grow further away from God in order to grow closer to your spouse, or you're going to grow closer to God and further away from your spouse. You need to be on the same page when it comes to your relationship with God. Pick someone who shares your faith. It's vitally important. So many people don't listen to that wisdom, and they regret it later, where they're just like, man, this is the most important relationship in my life, and my spouse does not share that with me, and it's difficult. And if you're in that situation, I encourage you to stay married. This covenant still matters, and you have a chance to minister to your spouse and to grow closer to God, and pray for your spouse. Pray that God brings them to faith as well. The Bible tells us that marriage is a picture of the gospel here. Paul talks about how marriage is kind of this picture of the way Jesus and his church act. There's, you know, we are created for relationship, and the marriage relationship is the closest relationship that many people will ever experience. And it's in that relationship that we get to display the gospel, We get to portray it. There's this idea of submission and self-sacrifice that gets to play out in our married relationship. And that puts the gospel on display. That's like what Jesus did for us. We get to live out in this kind of living example in biblical marriage what the gospel looks like. This self-sacrifice, laying aside our own desires and needs for the good of somebody else and for the good of what you're building together. So I share all this morning to encourage you to have a biblical perspective on what marriage is. It's something that's based on love and covenant. Where we're going for the rest of this series, we're going to be talking about conflict next week, and we're going to be talking about sexuality in the third week. And I tried to get the word out that that's kind of a PG-13 message. It's not going to be explicit, but it will be frank. We'll be talking about that. And so we want to make sure to prepare parents ahead of time for that. And plan accordingly with kids ministry and things like that. So that's where we're going in the course of this message, in the course of this series. We want this series to be very practical and to help you in your marriage or to help you think biblically about marriage. And I think next week is going to be very, very helpful to think through the idea of how to have conflict, how to have healthy conflict when it comes to our married life. And so I hope you'll join us again next week for the second part of the series. Would you pray with me? Lord, I thank you for your word. I thank you for this biblical picture of marriage. And Lord, I pray for the marriages in this church to be a display of the good news of the gospel. And I pray that you would help us to have strong marriages. Lord, I also want to pray for those in this room who are struggling right now with this. They're not sure how to live this out. They don't feel like they're on the same page with their spouse. Or maybe one of them has this perspective of wanting to minister to the other, and the other is concerned about being taken advantage of, or whatever it might be. Lord, we struggle over this. Marriage is such a important but difficult part of so many of our lives. And Lord, I pray that you would be the God of all grace. Lord, for those who are feeling just condemned or struggling with, you know, as we paint this biblical picture of marriage and feeling like theirs falls short in some way, we all fall short in so many ways, Lord. None of us is perfect, and there's no such thing as a perfect marriage. And so, Lord, I pray for those who are feeling that, who are feeling this kind of guilt or whatever it might be, to experience your grace and experience your love. And Lord, I pray for those who are yet to be married, those people in this room, young people who are thinking about that someday, what marriage is going to be like someday. Lord, may they just get the proper perspective about decision love. Love that's more than just a feeling and a passing emotion, but love that is based on a commitment to love and serve the person that they're with. And Lord, I pray for strengthening in all the marriages in this room. I pray that you would help each and every person to grow closer to each other as they grow closer to you. And I pray for those who are in crisis mode. They came here this morning and they're just experiencing crisis when it comes to their marriage. I pray that they would look to you for help with that. That they would see you as a resource and as a help and as someone who wants to be there for them and to meet their needs and to fill them up with love and so that they can, Lord, rest secure in a relationship with you. And that frees them up to minister to their spouse in a way like nothing else does. So, Lord, please help every marriage in this room. Please help those marriages who have yet to begin and young people who are considering what marriage might be like in the future. Lord, may they be shaped more by your word than by our culture or by even past hurts. And Lord, we thank you for this time of exploring and considering what marriage is meant to be. We love you and we thank you. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.